When that gold line coffee hit the back of your throat, you got four delicious flavors. This ain't your grandma's pit water. This is gold line coffee, and it is the official coffee of hockey.
Alrighty, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Get the Puck Out, presented by Full Press Coverage. I am your host, Chris Mancuso, joined by my co-host, maybe one of the best-looking guys in all of hockey. Kyle, how are you today, buddy?
Thanks for the grave reviews there, Chrissy. It's good to be back here. It's dwindling summer hours. Everything's kind of a bit of a mess. There's not too much to talk about. All the RFAs that everyone spent all offseason talking about are still unsigned. There's been no big name that's broken, that's gotten the ball rolling. It's going to be a slow summer, Chris. It normally is. Everyone likes to think that everything's going to unfold in one fell swoop, and you know it's going to be a game of dominoes once it all starts happening. But a very slow start to the summer. Most of the GMs and even the beat writers, I went to go visit Bob on Margarita Island. And, you know, everyone's taking the summer off, so it's going to be really slow from here, probably till about the middle of September. That's when I think some of those contracts are really going to start to get nailed down. But not a whole lot going on. But, Chris, I wanted to talk about one of the big things that did happen. We kind of heard some rumblings a day or two beforehand, and then it was official.
Edmonton and Calgary
make a deal.
Blue for ass?
Both bad contracts, no doubt about it. But I mean, if you had to really kind of tally up the votes here, a lot of people have Edmonton coming out in front for once. Lucic for Neil, what do you think about the deal?
Yeah, I mean, one of those things where both guys obviously did. I mean, James Neal couldn't have had a worse debut season in Calgary. Didn't really seem to fit there. But when you look at the upside to what each guy brings, James Neal's only, what, one season removed from being a damn good player for the Vegas Golden Knights, only two seasons removed from, you know, his season down in Nashville and, Nashville and Vegas, he went to back-to-back cups. Did he have a good season last year? No, but for the high-end point, like, if you can stick Neil next to McDavid and Draisaitl and he starts finding that nose for the net again and pots goals, I just don't see Lucic turning it on the way that Neil can. So I'm going to score this one with everyone else. I'm going to go with the crowd and say that the Edmonton Oilers definitely came on top of this deal. That's not to give any disrespect to my man Lucic. He played the game really hard, and I think he was one of those things where he was just playing too hard, and I think it's taken a toll on his body.
Absolutely, too. And you look at the deal, as you mentioned, Neil couldn't have had a worse year last year. But, I mean, if you had to bet on a bounce-back year from Neil, you know, this is a guy who's got a career shooting percentage about 12%. Now, don't ask what Lucic is. It's actually higher, but he doesn't shoot the puck, you know.
Not
to the extent that James Neal does, but this year was the first year in James Neal's career that his shooting percentage dipped down below 10%. It's at 5% for the year. It was an abysmal season. Even if James Neal comes back and scores 15 to 20 goals, this is a big win for Edmonton. They need all the depth they can possibly find. And again, if I'm betting on a bounce back year from Neal, or hoping that Lucic suddenly learns to use his hands and feet at the same time, I'm going to take the Neal side, especially if you're seeing him being slotted in, whether it's on the first line with McDavid or even on a secondary support role for a guy like Nugent Hopkins, who really hasn't seen any talent brought in around him. It's, you know, Edmonton needs every ounce of depth that they can find, and I'm going to bet on Neal being a bit more productive than Lucic there. Still a bad deal all around. And one of the things I wanted to say about it is that I seen a couple Calgary beat reporters really confused by the move and not really sure how to react to the move. It's, you know, like, it almost seems like Lucic is done playing effective hockey. He is a crash and bang fourth line player making about $6.5 million. It's just, he needs to be protected in the draft for the Seattle expansion draft in two summers. That's going to be a problem unless he's bought out, unless Brad Treliving has other plans for Lucic where he figures he can ship him over to Ottawa or something there. It just seems like a really confusing move from Calgary's standpoint here.
Yeah, I get why Edmonton hits the reset button, because Milan Lucic, no, I mean, I love Milan. It's hard. I'm a Bruins guy. Everybody knows that. He did a lot for them, but he is finished, man. Like, he's finished. James Neal had one bad season. He's removed from a very, very, 1 year removed from a very good season and a stretch of very good seasons. He has a bounce back capability. Milan Lucic, I love the guy. I think he seems like a decent enough guy. I'm sure that there's a career somewhere else in the game for him outside of hockey. You can get into media, you can get into really anything, coaching, anything. It's time for him to think about those options, but I mean, he really wouldn't because the contracts are guaranteed, but yeah, it's one of those things where unless they have a plan like where they're going to buy him out, but even still, I don't know, man. I don't really see the point from Calgary's end unless it's one of those things where like they see something the rest of us don't. I just don't understand the move, but you see the Western Conference Canadian teams, talking about two big banger wingers. Well, the Vancouver Canucks went out and added Michael Ferland since the last episode. A lot of those Western Canadian battles have some heavy hitters in it now, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah, and everyone's really vibing and bouncing off that Stanley Cup playoff vibe of, you know, it was a tough series. Everyone was almost a year or two away. If Tampa would have won the Cup this year, teams would have completely made that push away from tougher hockey, as it's kind of been the past few years. Having Boston and St. Louis have the war that they did really made teams consider the value and the importance of having players who are willing to throw it all on the line in the playoffs. You need to have those guys. And, another good move, in my opinion, for the Vancouver Canucks to get a guy like Ferland. They made the deal with Tampa earlier. They got JT Miller. They're actually surrounding Bo Horvat with some talented wingers. This is a very good move for them. A lot of people seem confused as to what they're doing. But, I mean, there comes a point in time in a rebuild where you have to surround the talent that you draft with some NHL talent that you can gel with. You look at a guy like Bo Horvat, he's had to play with Sven Barchi, Jake Virtanen, just guys that
have Shotgun Jake.
Yeah, I mean, I love Shotgun Jake, don't get me wrong. I think he is eventually going to score that 20-goal season. But in my opinion, he's a crash and bang bottom six player. And, you know, leaving a guy like Bo Horvat to dry, Besser was his winger for his first couple of years until Elias Pettersson came around, and they just formed a chemistry that Bo Horvat wasn't going to win back. So to have JT Miller, to have Michael Ferland, to have capable options surrounding that second line in Vancouver, this is a good thing for that squad. Like I said, there comes a phase in that rebuild where you start have to add in talent around those players. And, you know, it's going to be a tricky season. If Vancouver makes the playoffs, first round pick gets sent to Tampa Bay. If they miss the playoffs this year, that's when things start to get shaky, because if they have another bad season next year, that first round pick is going to Tampa regardless. There's no condition on that second year. If they make the playoffs, they'll get the pick. If Vancouver misses the playoffs, then they really have to accelerate the plan, because giving up a lottery pick like Ottawa just ended up doing, is not really what Vancouver wants to do. I think they're banking on getting some upgrades on the back end. Obviously, Quinn Hughes, the big name, going to be coming to the Canucks this year. Possibly former fifth overall pick from the McDavid draft, Olli Uolevi. He's been held down by injuries for the past couple of years, but he has, paid his dues in the AHL. He's been groomed. He wasn't rushed like Edmonton probably would have. You're starting to see some pieces, some interesting pieces for that matter, start to get added into this Vancouver lineup. And I think that they could go out and surprise people. Markstrom isn't a bad goalie. He actually stood on his head and probably did more damage than good by winning games this year. But he's not a bad option back there. I think Vancouver can surprise people this year.
Definitely, man. And I mean, it goes to show you, Jim Benning believes that they're at least 1 year or 2 years away from the playoffs, so he never would have put those conditions in. And you look around the rest of the team, and a guy like even keeping Alex Edler goes a long way when you're talking about young guys like Quinn Hughes jumping into the lineup. And a guy like Quinn Hughes is the game is modeled for those kind of defensemen now. So we'll see how long it takes for him to really get his feet wet and start contributing to that Vancouver team, because I'm thinking it's not going to be too long. But Kyle, one thing I want to talk about, we were talking about big bang and forwards, and this just doesn't make sense to me. I look at the remaining UFA free agents, and Patty Maroon's still out there. And I know that the St. Louis Blues have money trouble, but do you think it's one of those things where he's waiting for them to figure it out? Or what's going on here? How is Patrick Maroon, the big-bodied forward, you know, crash and bang, 20-goal seasons, plays the game the right way, always willing to throw when he has to. How's he still sitting out there unsigned?
I think, for me, there has to be a big gap between what the player and agent are looking for, which is probably a multi-year deal. And because you look at the success that the St. Louis Blues had, and I'm not going to say specifically because of Maroon, but Maroon played a big part in carrying that team. The little plays, the possession game that he drew, throwing the body, getting in the other team's face. He was just effective, and he was one of the guys that you've seen making something happen every time he was out there. This is a valuable guy that you can add to your team. So in my opinion, you know, there has to be something here that's kind of preventing it. Now, don't forget, you know, he took a one-year deal last year. He was a UFA last year. He signed for peanuts. He signed for about $1.75 million last year on I don't want to say a show-me deal, but, I mean, if he's shown anything, he's probably worth a little bit more than that, and I think that's where the holdout's coming from. He's probably looking for a $2 or $3 million contract for 2 or 3 years, and I'm just surprised that a team hasn't bid at that yet. Whether it's a team like Boston, whether it's a team like Carolina, you know, this is a guy who's going to add value. Exactly. I mean,
Colorado, I could see a fit with them.
Colorado would be a great fit.
I think Patrick Maroon would do great in the Colorado Avalanche dressing room. I think that they have a lot of young guys, and he would come in and play the style of play that when I look up and down their roster, they don't really have a guy like that that can contribute like Patrick Maroon. Sure, they got a couple guys that can hit, but that not guys that are going to be big bodies. You can put Patrick Maroon on the second power play unit in front of the net, no problem.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Other notable free agents out there, Kyle, we have, you know, there's Jake Gardner still unsigned in Toronto.
I haven't heard Jake Gardner.
I haven't heard one word on Jake Gardner.
I haven't heard a team that's been interested. I haven't heard a number that's floated around. I haven't heard jack shit regarding Jake Gardner.
No, it's almost like Jake Gardner is maybe stepping aside for a bit and taking time for what all those savage animals did to him this year during his playoff run or something. I haven't heard anything. You got the old boys
mental
Joe
health
Thornton,
retreat.
Patrick Marleau.
Yeah, those are two big names too. Thornton and Marleau unsigned still. Everyone seems to be pointing at San Jose as the return option. That's
Wouldn't
a big
that have
reason.
Already happened?
That's what I was thinking, because the condition that Carolina made with the Leafs is that they wanted to keep Marleau. If he was willing to play, they were happy to keep him aboard. You know, he was really set on returning home and getting it done to spend his last year or two in San Jose. That's what he wants. It's what the family wants. I'm sure that's what the team wants. But nothing's been done. So in my opinion, I don't think there's a rush on this. Marlowe's going to be a shark one way or another. They're probably looking at what they have left. And I kind of look at it like Joe last year. They had a bunch of cap space remaining. Joe Thornton probably wasn't asking for $8 million, but because they had the cap space there, they threw a little bit extra at him. So I'm wondering if the
what happens
they're
to
trying
Joe
not to cap
Joe
themselves
if they bring
out.
Back Marlowe. You can't have both of them. You can't.
I think you could. I think that
no.
Joe Thornton's in a big step back from what he's going to demand this year. I'm not saying league minimum.
On the ice, those guys are too slow. They're too behind. You can have a Joe Thornton or a Patrick Marleau, but if the Sharks go out there and take a young body out of this roster that I think Doug Wilson's doing a great job with and a great job progressing and takes away a couple good opportunity spots to make sure that you have the 40-year-old the 40-year-old stepbrothers here coming back, Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, fucking Ninja and Dragon there doing karate out in the garage. I don't know about that. I don't think so. I would only
weird,
do one or the
weird
other. And Joe Thornton, there's a lot. I would love to see Joe Thornton. You know, I know he would like to go to a contender, but I just, when I look down the list of contenders, unless he's signing for dirt cheap, there's just not an option for him. I mean, even the Leafs took a Jason Spezza before. Like, I thought Joe Thornton maybe had that, especially with Nazem Kadri going, the option to maybe sign a real cheap deal in Toronto. And then they went Spezza, which was very strange. I saw a match there, but I'm not sure. I don't know what's going to become
I definitely understand what you're saying with bringing them both back. It doesn't seem like the most wise option. But if you can take a guy out of your lineup like Melker Carlson or Barclay Goodrow and replace him with Marlow on your third or fourth line, there still is a hole on the third line. You know, Dylan Gambrell right now is their front runner for that third line spot, and that's just not going to get it done. Couture and Hurdle are great centers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you look at what Thornton did last year. I think it really took him a while to adjust to not being in the top six anymore. Last year was probably the first year in Thornton's career, maybe other than his rookie season or two, where he was a designated third line center. And it took him a while to adapt into that role. When I look at what he did down the stretch with Marcus Sorensen and Kevin LeBanc, he carried those two rookies to great seasons. Now, maybe that's why LeBanc didn't get that money. Everyone thought that the agent should have been fired and he was robbed. He signed a $1 million deal. That's a guy who had 54 points.
I know. And that man, Doug Wilson also got a great deal out of Timo Meier coming on an RFA. Yep. Got him to do 4 years, not even walk into his UFA. $6 million. Doug Wilson has a jackhammer hanging between his two legs, and he is not afraid to pull it out and helicopter it around and teach these guys a lesson. And I know my guy in Boston, Don Sweeney, won GM of the year, but when Doug Wilson wasn't even nominated after he pulled the old Houdini trick, doggy style in the window on the Ottawa Senators there with Mike Hoffman, and then ended up with Carlson anyway, like ended up having both of those guys who were the whole problem in Ottawa anyway, just took that situation, got a little more out of it for Hoffman, and then took Carlson on. Like, genius, man. I can't believe he wasn't nominated. And that was not only a slap in the face to Doug Wilson, but that was a slap in the face to America, if you ask me, man, because he deserved it.
For sure. Yeah, I thought he did some really good things. And that Timo Meier contract is a great example of Doug Wilson getting ahead of the ship here and betting on what players can do. And now there's a delicate line with that. You know, I'm sure Dubas wished he would have tried to make these kind of contract attempts with Marner and with Matthews a year before. Because if you wait too long, if they give Timo Meier another show me deal and he goes out there and he scores 40 goals, that $6 million is suddenly 8 or 9. Guaranteed. So it's a tricky spot to be in. And I'm surprised Meier signed that contract. But you know, money is not it for everyone. Look at Pasternak. I don't want to say he didn't care, but he's in the show. He's making more money than he ever was going to be. Some people don't see it like that.
Yeah, he had the exact same stat line as Draisaitl, and they were UFAs in the exact same year, and Draisaitl got 8.5, and he took 6.7. He could have got 8.5 if he really wanted to pull the Willie no-bangs and bully Donnie Boy around. But yeah, some guys, you know, it's hard to say they don't care about money when they still get 6.7 million. But you know what I mean? Like, at that point, it's what the hell's the extra million? And Panarin did that with the Islanders. His agent, his girlfriend, they all wanted him just to take the most money on the island. And at the end of the day, he woke up the next day and said, fuck you guys, I want to play in New York.
Yeah, he shot about 13 mil off of that 7-year deal that he could have made more.
Speaking of Panarin, I want to say something. He made some comments.
Disparaging
comments about his country's president, Vladimir Putin. Now, listen, bread man, I like you, but like, I don't want to see the bread man put in the oven, because the one thing, if you know anything about Vladimir Putin, is he doesn't really appreciate disparaging remarks. And anywhere across the world, like journalists that have said stuff about them, you know, they get poisoned and shit like that. I mean, you just signed a contract like that. Breadman, stay out of that stuff, buddy.
Exactly. Yeah, no, the Rangers are going to be lucky if Panarin shows up to camp.
I'm going to do this on behalf of Artemi Panarin, because I don't want to say anything happened. This is for Vladimir Putin. We're sorry, buddy. Please don't poison the bread man. We need to see sick goals and sick setups this year on the Rangers. That team is, speaking of the Rangers, Kyle, Jacob Trouba, $8 million a season. Passer, nah. Like, what do you think? Passer, yeah, or what?
I don't know. It's hard to say you pass on that deal. The only thing I'll really say about it is that he was paid as a UFA, and he's not. And I understand that was probably some of the delegations that went in before New York went to Winnipeg and even set this trade up to get Jacob Trouba. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they had an idea of what he was going to come in around. but this guy's making more than Victor Hedman. And I know everyone will say, well, you know, they don't have to pay taxes and they live on the fucking beach. There's not much to complain about when signing a contract in Tampa Bay. But, you know, this is a guy who's making just as much money as Brent Burns. He's making just as much money as John Carlson. Those are three elite defensemen in Hedman, Carlson, and Burns. You add a guy like Trouba in there, he's not necessarily worth that dollar, but I can argue that in today's NHL, that's what he's worth. That's the only really thing that seems to be floating around. Everyone knows and will agree that, yeah, he was probably slightly overpaid. I have him coming in around 6.5, maybe 7 on an overpay. He ends up coming out with an extra mil. Is it that much to argue about? I think yes, because now they have a big decision to make. The Rangers are over the cap. They need to make a couple moves. My first bet is Vladimir, not Vladimir, sorry, Namestnikov getting the boot in the ass out the door. He carries a $4 million deal on, he's got 1 year left. That's probably the easiest contract to move. I know everyone wants to talk about Kreider, but if it comes to keeping Kreider for the year, and if he's got plans to be, if Gorton's got plans to keep him around in the future, you keep Kreider and you move the hell on from Vladdy and get him out of town. It's not going to be that hard to make a trade to find a home for Namestnikov. Now, if Kreider isn't in Gorton's future team plans, then that's the guy you have to move, because this is a guy who's going to have more value. So, I mean, it really all depends what Gorton thinks is going to happen with free agency next year, if he's going to be able to keep him around, if he has the cap room, because he did overpay for Panarin, he did overpay for Trouba. You're going to have to take a cut somewhere. Now, if that's the whole Kreider thing, I know you're pumping the tires on Don Sweeney to get to make a call in there and to get Kreider on the Bruins. But, I mean, to me, I don't know why you would move him unless you think you can't afford him. It's one of those guys.
I agree. Kreider's
a big part of that
team. One of those
team,
guys you don't want to move, and he plays that playoff style too. Like, if you get Chris Kreider in the playoffs and get him on a team that's going to be in the playoffs, he's going to do some damage. You saw what happened. Didn't he go into Carey Price that year? And he plays so hard. He goes to the net. And like you said, I'm definitely a big fan of Chris Kreider. I think he would be the perfect second line option guy to be beside David Krejci and Jake DeBrusk. And I think that, you know, with the guys coming off the books next season, and if Torrey Krug doesn't come back to Boston, I mean, I could definitely see Don Sweeney, if Kreider's on the market, he would jump in there 110%.
Absolutely. And yeah, as you mentioned, Krug, there doesn't seem to be any further talks along to it. He signed for another year, so it's nothing's imminent.
No, that's one of those things where you can even keep him to be your own rental. But here's the thing, unless Torrey Krug takes a decent contract, he's going to be on his way out, because there's no way Boston can afford to pay him any more than $6 million a year. That's probably
most. If he looks at a Trouba contract as a comparison, it's see you later. That money is not going to be around. If he takes a $6 million contract for 5 or 6 years, I'm sure Sweeney and Krug would both be on top.
Does that affect McAvoy?
If they re-sign him longer and for more, absolutely. If it's a $6 million deal, whether it's 5 or 6 years, I think you got the space to make it work, knowing that you can do something with David Backes down the road, and he's only around.
I meant more or less the Trouba contract. Does that affect, do you think that affects the way that Don Sweeney can negotiate with Charlie Mack?
I don't think the Trouba comparison really comes to mind when you're talking about a guy like McAvoy.
I just saw it circulating on Twitter, and I kind of felt the same way. I felt that they weren't that comparable. I felt that Lindell in Dallas is a little more of a comparable.
Absolutely. That's a great comparable.
And he came in at, what, 5.9, 5.8? So that's where I see Charlie. I see him on the exact same kind of deal as a buddy there down in Florida, Lindell.
I think it's all term, too, right? Now, a guy like McAvoy, I don't see him coming in for more than 3 or 4 years. I think Sweeney tries to line this up so that he is still a restricted free agent for his next contract.
Well, Charlie believes in Charlie, too. He doesn't mind that option, because he knows that if another 2 or 3 years, if he takes a 5.5, 6 now, he's confident enough that he'll be in that talk for 10 plus in 3 years from now.
Down the road, absolutely, yeah.
In a new salary cap. And, you know, there could be a whole different pay structure. The league's growing so fast, and this next negotiation, you know, it's going to be a fucking dog and pony show to start, but we'll see what happens when it comes to the CBA. But you know, Gary Bettman's involved, so I would definitely expect to see some sort of work stoppage. But on the good things that Gary Bettman has done, he's expanding the game. We talk about that, Kyle. The Seattle franchise names, Ronnie Francis as the guy running the show there, the GM and everything down there in Seattle. What do you think? He's the big honcho now.
Pretty smart call for Seattle. Tough to really argue the decision. Francis isn't new to this. You know, this isn't his first pony show. He's going to be having a little bit of experience to work off and to really kind of settle into things and look no further than George McPhee and what he did with Vegas. Now, I don't think that Francis is going to have an easy as a time navigating this expansion window as McPhee did. McPhee was holding GMs with rope and, you know, getting away with first rounders and taking on bad contracts and making teams really pay. Now, you move forward a year and look at the success that the Vegas Golden Knights have now because of all the deals that were made, all the extra picks they had that they traded. They weren't afraid to move those picks and prospects that they got. They were shipping guys out left, right, and center. Oh, we got a first, second, and a third for Vitar. I don't give a fuck. Is he worth it? No, I don't give a fuck. Get these picks out of here. They had a commodity to work with, and yeah, they made some really good deals on it. Now, if you look at teams thinking back, thinking, oh my God, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. I that's where I think that Seattle comes in a little bit worse. I don't think that you're going to see highway robbery from teams, but I do think that you're going to see some considerable contracts moved, whether it's a guy like Louis Erickson or a guy like David Backus or Lou Cheech or Neil, or those kind of guys are still going to be involved, and teams are still going to be willing to shed a first or a second or potentially any futures to get rid of those contracts. That's just still going to happen. I just don't think to the same extent of which McPhee got away with. Teams have learned a lesson, and I think that if there comes a situation where, you know, there's not a great player you're going to lose, but you don't want to lose them, I think you're just going to see a few teams bite the bullet, because you see Florida make some moves. They got rid of Marchessault to fit in a guy like Alex Petrovic. That was a guy that they protected. They wanted to protect Petrovic, and they got rid of Marchessault. What a horrible decision that was. That's going to be a lesson learned. If there's a fringe guy who's a borderline keeper who you can't fit, teams are going to bite the bullet, in my opinion. You know, I'm not an NHL GM, so I can't speak for anyone, but I don't think you're going to see those robbery deals this time around.
Yeah, no, definitely, because just the instant success, I don't think anybody expected that. And now you look at where they are now. They were able to create such a buzz. They got Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty on that team now as well, who are two star NHL forwards. And yeah, the McPhee ran that like an absolute pimp. Speaking of running stuff like a pimp and taking chances, Stan Bowman in Chicago, he doesn't really fucking... he doesn't really take no prisoners, and he's the kind of guy who runs his franchise and makes the moves that he wants to make, and he's not afraid to be bold. And, you know, you see him move Anisimov to Ottawa for Zach Smith, and they save a couple bucks, but they brought in Andrew Shaw, who had a great season last year for Montreal. And but the weird thing was that trade that they made with Buffalo, Hokiaru for Alex Nylander. Like, he's going crazy. Brought in Lena to compete with Corey Crawford. And, yeah.
And Crawford Stan was Bowman, hurt for a lot of these for last year.
He's just
year,
throwing
right?
the balls in the air this summer, and I like to see it.
Absolutely. And you ask me, is this a better team they had than last year? By a stretch, I really do think so. Crawford was hurt last year, and their backup tandem was Chris D'Elia and Cam Ward, and that simply wasn't going to get done, even though Kane had an amazing season. Jonathan Toews had a really revitalizing year and brought some promise back to his offensive potential, because he kind of plateaued at about a 50-60 point guy, and everyone was thinking, well, for $10 million, you sure expect a little more. He had a big year, but they weren't going to get anything done with the goaltending that they had, plain and simple. Now, Corey Crawford, does he come back fully healthy? Is he going to be able to play to the level that, you know,
doesn't matter? They got Big Dick Robin.
Exactly. And I think you're really going to see goaltenders stop playing 70 games a year. I think those years are done. You look at the last four Stanley Cup winning teams, every single goalie has played less than 50 games during the regular season. They're not exhausted. Tuukka Rask, perfect example. Very important for the Bruins to keep a guy like Halak around. I know that everyone likes to mention his name in potential trades to clear up cap. That's a bad move.
Bad decision.
Tuukka Rask benefited a lot by being monitored and kept. Look at a different sport. Look at the Toronto Raptors with Kawhi. You know, the team worked with him, and they worked with Tuukka Rask, and that was an excellent position for Halak to be in as that 1B option, and Tuukka Rask excelled because of it. So I really start to think that even Louis Domingue, he's probably going to play 30 games, or whether it's McElhinney, whatever Tampa does. Vasilevsky, I don't want him playing 60, 65 games.
It's not good for them. Look at Freddie Anderson. Happens to him every year. He gets burned out.
Yeah, and the Leafs didn't have a backup last year. They kind of put some faith in Garrett Sparks. It didn't work. He didn't have the year that he wanted. They moved on from guys like Picard, and speaking of McElhinney, who was a great backup the year before. So I think that the days of goalies playing 70 games a year, that's done. So Leonard is a great addition here to battle with Crawford. As you mentioned, Andrew Shaw, he's a guy that stirs the drink. The deal that I didn't get, the Joki Haru deal for Nylander, I really look at the defense of Chicago and see those aging Albatross contracts and Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. And I really think that Joki Haru had a spot to grow with that team. Now, insert this year, they're going to bring in Adam Boqvist, former first rounder, top 10 pick for them. If they really feel that he's leaps and bounds beyond Henry Joki Haru at this stage, then that's an okay move to make, because Joki Haru's not gone for nothing. They have a guy that's coming in Boqvist to replace him. And Bowman really likes his recovery projects. You've seen it last year with Dylan Strome. He likes to make a gamble on himself. And I think that, you know, has Nylander been, you know, has he had problems with the development program in Buffalo? Absolutely. They have a really shit record in Rochester of being able to develop players. When's the last time the Buffalo Sabres have produced that second or third round pick who's had a really strong developing campaign in the minors? I haven't really seen it. Maybe Jake McCabe, maybe.
You have to go down to pretty B-list people.
Exactly, right? And Nylander's a former top pick. So, I mean, like I said, Bowman likes to make those risks. He likes to gamble. He likes to bet on himself. And I think that he's thinking that he's going to come out on top here, or there's no way that he makes that deal. So watch out for Chicago. They're going to have a really interesting year this year with some stability back in net, with Lehner as a backup, with Crawford back, Andrew Shaw into the mix. This is a team that I don't want to say that they have a wide open window, because I think those years are gone. But, you know, can they muster up a season and make the playoffs and make a surprise out of it? Who knows? I think that Chicago probably pushes for a playoff spot. If they don't make it, it's probably going to be by a slim margin, a couple points. But if you had to ask me, I'm putting them in the playoffs this year. If they get anything that the Islanders got from Lehner last year, and Crawford's back to at least a mediocre goalie, this is a team that's going to score goals. Patrick Kane is a freak in nature. He's probably going to put up another 100 points this year. So, I mean, a very interesting offseason for Chicago to really kind of put themselves back in a position to win again. And Bowman's just the guy to have in charge to run that show. So good moves for them. And now pretty much that we got to do is play the waiting game with the RFAs. I was hoping Point would have been signed by now. I'm sure you were hoping that McAvoy had something locked up. But like I mentioned, this is going to be a long summer.
One's stressed. Unless an offer sheet comes, then you deal with it. I mean, Carolina kind of wrote the book on how to deal with an offer sheet. You kind of just laugh at them and then match it. So Everyone's kind of in this holding pattern. Kyle, we are on Get the Puck Out right now on the Full Press Radio Network. We're here, Kyle, this weekend. I had a crazy weekend this weekend. We got to talk about it a little bit. So here in Niagara, New one of the newer Toronto Maple Leafs defensemen, Ben Harper. He came over in the old Zaitsev CC deal. Another one of those that you could classify under Kyle Poofer ass, but that's a whole nother topic. So anyway, Ben Harper throws this big charity game here. So I get in contact with the guy running the thing, and we have an interview with Ben Harper. We're going to play in a second, but Kyle, it's all about what happened after the tournament. Now, there was a post-game party that Ben threw on the top of Jack's Cantina, you know, like the top patio.
Oh,
for anyone
yeah.
that doesn't know, it's like one of those clubs that's a club on the inside, and then you go upstairs, and it's like a beautiful view, and there's the falls and the Ferris wheel and all the big hotels and buildings, and there was a band, the Keystones. They kicked ass. And Kyle, I'm here to give Ben Harper some credit. This guy does not have alligator arms. He had the bar open for the party. We got in one. Everyone was in one. Brady Tkachuk and Ben were up on stage singing songs with the band. I must have drank, and I'm being modest here, I'd say 10 or 11 Coronas and a couple mixed drinks, because you know, once the rum and coke gets going, I'm getting fired up. And I want to say we now have this interview here that we cut with Ben Harper, and he's just a really good guy. So check it out. Newest Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman, Ben Harper. Ben, how are we today, buddy?
Great, how you doing?
Good, good. So yeah, you're sitting there on Canada Day, probably having a good time, and all of a sudden you're coming home.
Yeah, it was a crazy day. I woke up at about 8 o'clock and had actually missed when the news had broke. They tried to call me at 7:15 or so it was early, but I had a couple messages from Ottawa, and they had told me that I was traded to Toronto, so it was a bit of a whirlwind, and it took a while to process, but once everything kind of settled and it really sank in, I'm really excited about the opportunity and being close to home.
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously that means more family, more friends, a little more closer travel for the big Christmas, big events and that. So speaking of big events, we're here at the Gale Center. First ever Ben Harper big game. Why don't you let them know what it's all about? I know it's for Jumpstart here.
Yeah, we're raising money for Jumpstart. Kids ball hockey tournament, ages 7 to 14, girls and boys. Basically, I was contacted by a guy that's running the whole event, Alan Boyden, who I know from mm-hmm. my Guelph Storm days, and he reached out to me and said, "Do you want to put an event on and back in your hometown?" And we have this this ball hockey tournament that he had ran a similar event for. And,
okay.
I had been thinking about doing something for a while now, and it was during my first full NHL season that he contacted me. And then we kind of started going through the process of picking the charities. Yeah. And at the time, I was playing in Ottawa at the Canadian Tire Center, so it made a lot of sense for me to affiliate myself with Jumpstart. And they've been great in supporting this event as well. And I think their cause is great, and what they do for kids in the Niagara community will be great as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, they're like in 70 different sports leagues. I know you have, 250 kids here today partaking, all ages. And it's a great event, man, and it's awesome. One question, I don't want to bug you, I don't want to take you away from the kids too much. What can Leafs fans expect that maybe didn't want to watch a lot of Ottawa games last year? What can they see from Ben Harper?
Yeah, I think that my role on the team is going to be being solid defensively. I spent a lot of the time penalty killing when I was in Ottawa, and that's kind of been a strength of mine since playing junior. Now just adding a little bit of size and a little bit of toughness to the back end.
Yeah, you know, when you go in, it looks like a first-round matchup against the Boston Bruins is always going to be a thing, and a guy your size is never going to be a bad thing. Ben, thank you so much for your time. I just wanted to stop by and say hello, and thank you very much for all the work you do, man.
Thank you.
To meet you.
Thanks for having
this
me
is Chris Mancuso on Full Press NHL. Take care, guys. All right, guys, that was Ben Harper with Get the Puck Out, presented by FullPressRadio.com. He's a pretty good guy there, eh, Kyle? It was nice of him. I didn't want to take too much of his time. You know, he seemed really willing to talk, but there was a whole lineup of kids getting autographs, and he was seeing everybody, and, you know, he's from the area, tons of friends, so I just made sure I grabbed him. And you know, if you're a Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, just because a certain player doesn't work out in one system or organization, it doesn't mean necessarily that it will for the other. And he's a big penalty killer, which the Leafs struggle with at times. So he could find his way maybe into that sixth defenseman spot just for that reason. If not, he should be a good seventh option or down in the Marlies at least for a call-up.
Yeah, for sure. You look at some of the options that Leafs had up at the end of last year with Ron Hainsey and Martin Marincin. Can a guy like Harper step in and, you know, do a relatively comparative job. I think so. You know, he's a big guy, and
he made me look like I was 5'1".
Looked like he was 3 feet taller than you. That guy's a monster on the back end. So, I mean, definitely doesn't hurt to have a guy like that in the lineup. Like you said, it's really tough to judge anyone coming out of Ottawa because, I mean, that's what I mean. Poor Anisimov.
Poor Brady Kachuk, too. Poor Brady. He's such a good player, and he's got to be there.
I know, right? Well, we're just scratching the surface here. Interview with Ben Harper. Who knows what's on the horizon next? We do have some big things in plan for next year, but we're entering that summer stage. We're going to take a couple weeks off. We're going to kick back up at the start of September. We're going to lead you into some fantasy keeper topics, top centers, top D-men, top goalies. We're going to get into that all at the beginning of September, and we're going to bring all the fantasy and NHL news that we got to you then. But in the meantime, it's the dog days of summer. We're going to go up and visit Bob again and Margarita Island and enjoy the rest of this summer.
Yeah, it's time for us to take a little break here. I just want to thank everybody who's tuned in week in and week out. We started this. We came up with the idea kind of around this time last season and really put it into motion, I think, the beginning of last September. So we've been cracking at this for about 11 straight months now. So to take a month off, clear the heads, get new ideas, and if anybody has any suggestions, forward them through to us. We'll still be talking to everybody on Twitter, but the boys, you know, other projects, family stuff to focus on right now while it's so quiet. And again, we appreciate you down here at Get the Puck Out. So for the final time this season, I'm going to let everyone, all the boys know, keep your fucking stick on the ice and keep that cock out your pants because you just never know what's going to happen, guys. Take it easy.